Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Relationship Marketing 101. Directions University at directionsu.com delivers passion-powered results for your life and business so that you can live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com. I am calling to you live this week from beautiful, sunny Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. And I cannot tell you how excited I am about our guest today. I have my friend and co-host, Rhonda Del Baccio, the story lady herself from ProfitableStorytelling.com on the line with me. And we have got a great show planned today, don't we, Miss Rhonda?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm just so excited, and it's always fun when somebody connects the dots in an interesting way and adds both understanding and value. And so I'm really thrilled about what we're going to be doing with the show.
For those of you who are listening who had expected our guest today to be Mark Naiswani, well, Mark is not going to be with us because his mom went back home yesterday. But Mark will be here on a future episode of Relationship Marketing 101.
Yes,
so
sure
we kind
will.
Of thought quickly, and we went, oh my, this is a great opportunity late last night to get some people that could be on the show that we've been wanting to get on the show. And very nicely, we were able to do just that. So what are we going to be talking about today, Ms. Rhonda?
Well, you had told me that you have a new bachelor student who is somebody who has been in the offline business world, and I don't know exactly for how long we'll find that out, but has been in there for some time and has been trying to do things online and just didn't quite seem to get the kinds of results that she wanted. And then through going through the Directions University Bachelor's Program materials, finally something shifted in her understanding, and that's what we are going to be talking about today. So I'm really excited. Yeah, I'm excited to welcome Marie Hyland to our show. And so she said she was a little nervous, but I said, you know, our job here is to make you shine and look great, not to trip you up or play stump the guest so that she needn't worry. We have a very loving, open, and respectful place here.
Just pretend we're sitting at dinner chatting.
Yes, we are, basically. That's exactly what we're doing. And that's one of the comments I hear more people say when they listen to our show. They go, it just sounds like you guys are sitting at a table having a coffee together. I said, well, yeah, that's pretty much it. Even though we're not physically together, that's the feeling. So just enjoy that, Marie, and welcome.
Hello, Marie.
Hi. Hello. Can you hear me?
I can. Yes. You sound loud and clear.
Oh, good. Okay, great. Thank you for having me.
But thank you for being here. Marie and I met a couple months ago in Tampa, Florida, at one of the Speaking Empire events that I was attending. And I get the card from one of my students who handed it to me, and I'm like, Naples olive oil? Oh, my goodness, I know this. I know who in Naples olive oil is. I know where they're at. They're only a few miles from me, right across the street from my cousin's restaurant.
Wow.
So,
that's pretty neat.
Naples Olive Oil has two stores here in Southwest Florida. They also have an online presence at NaplesOliveOilCompany.com. So the last night of that event, Marie and I got together with a few of my students, and we all went out to dinner and got to know one another. And it turns out that Marie is actually someone who's what I would call a serial entrepreneur. She's not somebody who has had one successful business. She's had successful business after successful business after successful business, but all of them in the offline world. And what's really allowed Marie to experience the success in her offline businesses is that she really gets strategy and systems. And really a big part of her success has been not trying to micromanage and do everything in her business, but really hiring the right people for the right jobs. But Maria is also someone who's been wanting an online business for quite some time. Been to tons of different seminars. She's bought tons of information products trying to figure out how all of it worked. And one of our conversations recently, she said to me, I finally got it. I wasn't looking at this as being anywhere near the same thing that I do in my offline business. And they're really the same thing. I really need to do the same things both places. And I'm like, you got it. That's so awesome. So I wanted to get Marie on the show today so that she can talk about relationships and how they've played a role in her business success over many different businesses. And then kind of ease into how that applies to this new area of her life in building this business online. So, Marie, why don't we start with what you told me just about on Sunday, with how you got your start in building businesses.
Well, I've always been interested in, I've always loved entrepreneurial things and selling, and I never really realized I was a marketer, I guess, but it's on some level you have to market to sell. It was just an innate thing. I think those of us are either right-brained or left-brained. I'm definitely a right-brained person. So I've been selling since I was in high school when I entered some contest thing, and I was third in the whole school, and I won a trip to a dude ranch.
Wow.
And, I remember as a child, I come from an immigrant family, and my mother worked third shift in a factory, so I was home alone always since I was very, very young, and I was an only child for many years until my half-brother came along. But I went door-to-door knocking, selling cookies and whatever was going on at school. So I guess I've been thinking about this call, and as I realized, gosh, you know, since I was really, really young, I always had a drive for more, and it just seemed like selling was natural to me. And when I got older, I needed to pay my way through school, through college. And the jobs at that point, I was a social welfare major, were $8 an hour. And that was not going to pay my student loans back. So my friends told me I should go into real estate because I had a good personality. That's why I went into real estate, which looking back at it now, it's like, oh, my God, that was probably the worst piece of advice I could have gotten. But thank goodness I did. And I did very well with real estate, and that led me to investing, led me to my next business, which was fast food restaurants. We built a chain of fast food double drive-thrus in Kansas City, then opened up, sold that, opened a high-end eyewear business at the Waterside Shops here in Naples. If anybody knows, it's a very high-end exclusive mall. And I got lines that nobody had and sold that. And then I took some time off and broke my ankle and did a bunch of flipping when real estate was crazy here, and I made a lot of money and lost most of it. Broke my ankle, thought, oh, my God, what am I going to do now? And I decided to go back into business and do business fixer-uppers of real estate because real estate had tanked, which led me to this little hole-in-the-wall vitamin store, which I thought was going to be a no-brainer to fix up. And that ended up being, like, something I detested more than anything. I would rather clean closets than sell vitamins. But that led me to the olive oil world, which I'm into now. So there's something about the fundamentals of business that is pretty constant no matter what you do, whether it's service-oriented real estate or a tangible item with brick and mortar. In the offline world, the fundamentals are the same. And so what I realized after starting into the bachelor's program is that this is another business, and the terminology is the same, and it's a little bit different, just like service is different than a tangible inventory item. The online world is really the same thing.
And so few people look at it that way, right?
Yeah, it took me a long, long time. I was telling you the story about when I started, I agreed to do the Bathwish program when Gina agreed to let me accelerate it, because, you know, I'm a big smart aleck and I like to do things right now, and I want everything on high speed. So she did accelerate 4 weeks for me, and I thought, hey, I'm not going to do the mind setting and the goal setting. I've done a million of those things before. I want to get right to the meat of this. And then I thought, no, I'm really not doing myself the right service by doing that. Let's just start at the beginning and listen to everything and do the homework, and let's just do this right, because I'm so sick of buying things. It's just like in a diet. I've been on every possible weight loss thing imaginable, and you never stick with it. And I've done so many different internet marketing seminars and courses and boot camps, and just can't get anywhere. And I was really committed this time to do it right. And so I did start from the very first one, the goal, the mind setting, the goal setting. I don't remember if one or the other was first. And that's where Gina talked about, you know, all the things you really need to do first in setting up your business. And I thought, business? What business? I didn't realize this was a business. I was looking at it as, okay, I'm taking another course that's going to take a year, and I don't know what happened, but there was something in the way she created the program that really created a shift in my mind. And then when I really related it to the business aspect and how would I do this if I was starting another business, it just became really clear to me. And so I was sharing with her the other night that I did a little, it's not really a flow chart, it's kind of my little
more than thing. Oh, it's a little drawing. That's a good way to describe it. It's just a drawing.
Yeah, it's really just the flip of online to offline. And, you know, I started back with okay, why are we doing this, you know, to get revenue? How are we getting revenue? Our storefront is really a blog. All the different things. I'm moving I have a second store in Fort Myers, and we're moving that location in the next couple months. So we're starting all over again with, you know, opening expenses, build out, inventory, licenses, starting capital, equipment, all that stuff. So all of that is really your build out. So all of the things we're doing with our interim setting it all up, that's all build out. You know, events are trade shows. I go to trade shows. Every single business I've ever been in, and I've been in some really diversified things, which is another reason that the light bulb went off, because I really get that service is really no different than a tangible thing. It's different, but not really. And
right.
So I've always been to trade shows and read my trade journals and all of that. Well, events are really trade shows.
They really are.
You know, you're free. Your low-entry things are really your lost leaders. We all do things for free, whether we're couponing or whether we're attending networking events or whatever. We all do things that require time and money to get people in the door. Outsourcing is really your payroll or your professional services. In the offline world, everyone has some sort of professional service, whether it's your CPA, your bookkeeper, you're a repairman, we have a lot of computer repair kind of things. Well, that's really your outsourcing on the online world. So, and your tools, you know, we have to have some tools. That's becoming really clear as I'm going into the program. And tools in the offline world are really your capital expense. You're not going to start a business without a phone and a fax machine. In my case, a POS system, a filing cabinet, a cash register, that kind of thing. Those are all tools to get me to open the door. Your domain name is really your business name. So it was so interesting to me how it's really kind of all the same. And at the end of the day, I had all these different things I did and never really opened the door for any money. So now I'm getting ready to open the door to make some money.
Is that not the coolest thing you've ever heard, Rhonda? Did we lose Rhonda? Let me get back to my control panel and see what happens.
I'm here.
Oh,
I just muted my phone so that there wasn't any echo, and then I forgot because I got all excited. I was like, oh, this is so brilliant. I love it. It's really simple, and yet it takes the understanding of somebody who's been in the offline world and all those businesses. And now that you have connected the dots for yourself, you're going to succeed so much more with your online aspect of your business, and that'll open the door with the little drawing and the understanding that you have for other people who have service-based businesses or offline businesses to come to that same understanding. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, and so most people, when they come into my program, they're thinking that the first thing they've got to do is go set up their website. Well, if you were building an offline business, would you make the first thing you did going and setting up your storefront, Marie?
Sure. No, and that was one of the questions I had in the very beginning, too, because I was so anxious, so let's get to the meat. What do I do? Do I blog on my website? Do I get a new website? Do I get a new blog? Do I use my own? Do I use my name? And you get yourself in just a tizzy of paralysis. And just like with the offline of brick and mortar, no, of course not. Of course I'm not going to go just do something. I'm going to pick what I want to do, first of all. I knew I was going into the olive oil business. Okay, so that's my theme or whatever. I can't think of the word I'm looking for right now. But anyway, then when you look for a location, you're not going to just go pick something. You're going to do some due diligence about location. You're going to do due diligence about the business you're going into. I did a ton of due diligence before I decided to do this. And, you know, all of the things in the online world with all the education we're doing, they kind of fall into a couple of different areas, actually. They're really opening expenses and due diligence at the same time. So the coursework and the learning, that's all in preparation to open. When you open your brick-and-mortar store, you don't just get the key to open the door. You build it out. You design it. You hire staff. You have to get your licenses. You get all your corporate papers in order, not necessarily in that order. There's some sort of financial projections with fixed and non-fixed expenses and how much, realistically, do you think what you're negotiating your lease also based on what you think that store is, how that store is going to perform. So one of the things that Gina is so brilliant at is her strategy of income. You know, she starts with the end in mind, too. How much do you want to make, and what do we need to do to get to that point? Well, if you're familiar with the brick-and-mortar concept in negotiating leases, you know, your lease needs to be 8 to 12% of your gross revenue. Well, good luck finding something 8%. 10 to 12 is probably more like it. And if you can negotiate 9 or 10%, that's doing very well. So then at the end of the day, if you're doing a $400,000 or $500,000 income and you get that revenue up to $600,000 or $700,000 a year, now your rent is down to 8%, maybe 7% or 8%. So you kind of have to do it that way, but you don't want to get in over your head in the beginning and have rents 15% to 20% of your revenue. You're dead out of the water already because you still got payroll and operating expenses.
Exactly. And, you know, it is no different in the online world. Your overhead, your operating expenses are things like your hosting account, your autoresponder, your shopping cart. If you're going to have an affiliate program, the cost of all of those, you've got to make enough money to be able to cover those costs or you're in big trouble pretty quickly. It is mm-hmm. no different than what you're looking at in the offline world, other than the fact that the costs are a lot lower. They're a fraction of what it would take to open a brick-and-mortar storefront, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
You know, and in a lot of ways, too, I'm thinking of some things I'm doing right now, and I also have rental properties. At some point, you have to decide, okay, when are you going to sell this thing because it's just draining you, even though it is an asset in one respect. But, you know, you've got bad tenants once again, you have to evict them, now you got to re-carpet, repaint, do all that stuff. At some point, it becomes a big money pit, and you have to decide, you know, okay, are you going to hang on to it or not hang on to it? And the same thing with the online, that whole shift of over the years, I've been spending money on, you know, my hosting, my this, my that, or whatever, some course or whatever, and it never occurs to me, okay, I mean, I know I have to make money, but it never occurred. Return on investment, for some reason, did not click. I don't know why. It just didn't. And now it just seems so stupid that I would even continue this long without expecting that.
Well, and you know, in the internet marketing world, there are so many different models you can use. Just like in the offline world, there are oh so many models you can use for building a successful business.
Mm-hmm.
There are, in the internet marketing niche itself, most people who are doing really, really well are usually people who are creating product after product after product, constantly having new products to do product launches with. But once they bring the customer in once, they don't necessarily continue to resell new products to that same person over and over again. Every time they create a product, they have to go out and get new customers. You wouldn't do that in an offline business, would you, Marie?
Mm-mm. No.
How would you do it in an offline business?
I'm sorry?
How would you do it in an offline business?
Well, for me, I do a lot of advertising, and we have an email list, and, you know, but we, through the years with the different businesses, print was a huge, huge part of our marketing, and now I don't do any print.
And in terms of products that you sell, you have products to bring customers in the door. Then you have products that you continue to sell to the same customers over and over and over again, don't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Most internet businesses don't think of it that way. If you really want to use a solid business model, you've got to have some low-end products that you can use to generate new customers. Then you've got to set your products up in a way that will get the same customers repeating their purchases from you over and over and over again. You can do that through something that's consumable, like a piece of software. You can do that through an information-based system that's, say, a membership site that has a constant, every month they're going to pay you so many dollars. But you've got to have something to generate the customer and something that continues to make you money from the same customers over and over and over again. And most online business owners don't even think about that. They just keep creating new product after new product after new product after new product. That's a lot of work.
Yes.
I couldn't imagine having to do that every 1 to 2 months to continue to make money. I would be exhausted. I don't think I would very much sleep just because it takes so much effort to do that. If you don't do that in an offline business, why should you do that in an online business? And I don't think it's necessarily your fault for not coming to this realization sooner.
Oh, okay.
I really think the other gurus that are online, we don't talk about this enough. We don't teach our students this often enough. Those who really are making big money in their businesses online, the 7, 8, 9-figure companies, they all understand this. But they don't necessarily share that with the people that are learning from them. And I think it's their fault and not yours.
Well, it's a really vast world, the online world, and it changes all the time, too. It has really been, in preparing for this call, I've been in my brain thinking about all the different things I've been to, and it really is it's confusing. You can see where, you know, I know I was there, so I totally understand where people are in their different aspects of the journey.
I really want to help you understand one thing that you just said. You said it changes all the time. It depends upon what you're thinking about in terms of what changes.
Right.
In reality, the only thing that changes is really two little itty-bitty pieces. Number one, how you drive traffic. Now, in the offline world, what that means is how you're doing your advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Some years doing, say, commercials through the cable company are going to bring you more customers. A couple
mm-hmm.
years later, it might be billboard advertising that really brings in more customers. In the offline
mm-hmm.
world, your constant thing for bringing in new customers will change too, won't it?
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. On the internet, it will change faster than it will change in the offline world. But it's not that the model for a successful business changes. The only thing that changes is how you do your advertising. The second piece that will change ever so slightly is that as new technology is created, there will be better ways of monetizing the business online that all of a sudden weren't available before, that all of a sudden are now available today. In the offline world, think about it as advancements in the quality of the products or expanding of product lines, same sort of thing. I am sure that the olive oil that you sell is not the only thing that makes you money, correct?
Correct, and I was just thinking, actually, just something just came to mind, Gina, as you were talking, and this is so typical of what I do. Last year, for example, you know, I went to several trade shows during the year, and I decided that I was going to do Christmas ornaments this year.
I'm
in the olive oil business. Now, I do other gifts and that kind of thing, but it's all related, it's all ancillary to olive oil to some level, except for the brie bakers. But so I decided, you know, we're in a resort area and we're right next to a gift store that's very successful. I'm going to do some really neat ornaments this year. So I bought, thousands of ornaments, and I got a really good price on them, and you know, our margins are great and all this stuff, and I got a whole bunch of different Christmas things, and we're really going to go into the whole Christmas part of it this year. Well, aside from the work thing, it's a tremendous amount of work, labeling, all the stuff that goes into getting it ready, you know, to sell. It was a huge flop. Nobody bought them. We did sell a few, but we ended up discounting them all out. I still have them left. It was so typical of my, as you know, Gina, my shiny ball syndrome. So we're doing really well, selling a lot of gifts. So we're selling gifts, lots of other stuff. And I lost sight of our core. And then I got some other gifts in there that were really beautiful, but they were a much higher price point than I know what my store is. So the moral of the story is I took my online challenge into my offline business last Christmas, too, and I got my wings clipped pretty good. So it was just kind of funny how, you know, you are what you are. So this year, we're not doing any ornaments. So it's really been, that just kind of came to me just now, and I thought, you know, it's just like the ornaments were some other seminar I've done a million times. So it's important to, again, stay with your core. I totally get what you're saying. I think that's true. I think what I was trying to say is maybe the software changes and all that. Just like everybody says, the business world changes. Not really. The fundamentals
really
are the same.
No.
It really doesn't. Yes, we're integrating social media, which we didn't have, you know, 15 years ago. And certainly modernization and technology has evolved, and there are things that we have now that didn't even exist a decade or two ago, but the business model is the same. And yes, there are many different models. There are retail, there's service, there's franchise, but at the end of the day, the fundamentals are still the same.
I was talking to a really good friend of mine last night, and I haven't talked to him in about 19 months. So we were catching up, and I'm like, so what are you doing now? And he's like, what are you doing now? Well, in the last 19 months, he's created 11 new products. 19 months ago, he had 3 products. Well, those 3 products are not even online available for sale anymore. And of the 11 he's created in the last 19 months, only 2 are still out there available for people to buy. And he said to me, you know, I look at what you're doing. He's like, and when he asked me the question, what are you doing? I said, well, the same old, same old. I have my lead generator that's working really well. I have my high-end back end. It's working really well. No, I haven't created a new product in 19 months, really. I have 1 new product that I talk about, my instant video. That's it, in 19 months. He's like, you know, I wish I could get to the point where I had a solid core of products that I sold over and over and over again, and I didn't have to constantly be developing these new products. And the reason he's developing new products constantly is because most of his products are software-based and technology keeps changing. The stuff he sold 19 months ago wouldn't even work today. If you even tried to make it, it wouldn't work. So if you really want to set up your solid business in the offline world,
you're going to find a line of products to carry that are evergreen, that don't require you to go and expand into things like Christmas ornaments when that's not your strength or that's not what your audience is used to getting from you. And it's going to allow you to continue to sell the exact same products, maybe freshen up a label or the packaging, but you can constantly keep selling those same products for many, many years to come. And so many people online really just don't realize that. They don't even think about it in those terms. If you can really start with a few products that you know your customers want and let them and what they say about what you're doing guide where you go next, you can really create a business model that really doesn't need a lot of changing and a lot of updating in the future. That means, oh, so much less work on your part, and you just continue to make the money over and over and over again.
Right.
Hey, I think that's true. And especially with what I do with olive oil, because this isn't going to be true in all tangible inventory, but for me, we have two fresh harvests every year. So they're still buying olive oil, but they're different olive oils every year. So, you know, it's just build up your list and repeat and market and add little things. Recipes are huge for me. And, you know, and I don't have to recreate the wheel.
Much more longevity in that, isn't there?
Right.
Oh, definitely.
Right.
And one of the best things.
Sorry, go ahead, Rhonda.
Oh, I was just going to say, one of the best things that you can do is if you have a tangible, or even with information products, Gina, I'm sure you'd agree, is to help people consume that thing better. So in other words, what you said about having recipes to go with the olive oil, like that could be a nice little info product that could be a seasonal type of thing, or, you know, just have a couple of them and then you're done. You don't have to keep doing them every single month. Or gift basket ideas incorporating the olive oil or whatever. So you have ways you can create information that helps people want to buy more of your product.
Well, and Gina knows that what I want to get into, I don't really want to do shipping and tangible products. My information aspiration is to do virtual tastings. So I want to teach people how to distinguish old rancid oil from fresh oil.
Yep. And that's
isn't that a great idea, Rhonda?
Yeah, it really is. And, I mean, just an example, not with olive oil, but I was doing some baking, and I said to my mom, I had made some muffins, and I said, oh, my baking powder is getting too old, and she looks at me like I've grown a second head. And I said, well, I can tell by the rise. They didn't rise like they should have, and they didn't taste wrong. Everything was tasting fine, but it just didn't chemically react properly. And then I got a fresh container of it, and I opened it up, and I sniffed it, and I went, yeah, this is fresh. And she sniffed it, and she went, oh, okay. And then I showed her the muffins that I made with the fresh and how different that was. So what I'm using that is to say that with anything you have, if you can show people how to distinguish old from new, good from bad, how to whatever, you have then a way to provide information that helps people consume your product, that helps them want to learn more from you and get more from you because you're helping them understand.
Right.
And even if you're in an information business and not a physical product business, it is absolutely no different than what you have to do with a physical product. If you don't get people to consume your information, they will not continue to make purchases of more information. The key to getting them to continue to buy information over and over and over again is in getting them to consume it. One of the things you've had a lot of success with in your olive oil business is by having the tastings, by having the recipes, you really are getting people to consume your olive oil so much more frequently, right?
Yes, definitely.
What can you do in the online world to cause people to consume your information is something that you're going to need to address.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's so many different ways of doing it.
Short videos, for example, 90 seconds or less, just real short, you know, demonstrating different things and sending them to an information piece, that would be one way. But, you know, there are a lot of ways to do it.
In years ago when I was first getting started in my business as opposed to being a JV broker working in everybody else's, at the time, ebooks were hot. Everybody was putting out ebooks. And my first few products were exactly that. They were ebooks. And I started putting some tracking code into my products so that I could see how many people were actually downloading my ebooks and how many people were opening and reading my ebooks. And I was really shocked when I realized that of those that bought them, less than 10% actually downloaded them. And of those that did download them, less than 10% actually opened and did anything with them. That really blew my mind. If you had, let's say you were selling toothpaste, if no one ever opened your toothpaste tube, would they ever buy another tube of toothpaste from you? Heck no, right? Why would they need
right.
to? So I decided to start playing around with finding a way to get them to consume the information because it really was amazing information. And that's how I came up with the whole model that I both teach and use today. The lessons in my 30-day challenge started out as two ebooks, but nobody was downloading them, much less opening and reading them. I simply took them apart and put them into a total of 16 lessons originally. Instead of two ebooks, they only got small bite-sized chunks. Each chunk had a theme, so kind of like a chapter in an ebook. For each chunk, there were actual action steps that people would take, assignments, if you will. Well, just that one little change made more than 50% of the people who got that actually get through at least half of the content in the course. It was, you know, the difference between 5% getting the information and 50% getting the information. It was huge. And to this day, that continues to really make it much more likely that people will consume my stuff. And if I can get them to consume, I'm going to get them to buy over and over and over again. So it's a really important piece that every online business owner needs to think about. How will you get them to consume your stuff?
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons that many of the online gurus will teach you that you need to have picks and shovels. In other words, instead of going out and just selling information, sell both information and tools, albeit automated tools, not physical tools, but tools. In the internet marketing space, tools include things like hosting, autoresponders, affiliate programs, shopping carts, any of those kinds of tools. The reason that so many gurus tell you that you want picks and shovels is that it's really easy to use the information products that you offer as lead generators to then get people to buy and consume the tools.
Yeah.
Simply create a how-to course around using the tool and break it up into parts so that you get more than 50% going through at least half. And it will be much more likely that they will consume the tools because you got them to consume the information. Just that one thing. Even if selling the tools is something you do at a really low price point, let's say it's just $5 to $10 a month, even at $5 to $10 a month for the tool, it really is easy to do high seven to low eight figure a year numbers by using information to get them to consume the tools. A really good example of that is a guy by the name of Jermaine Griggs. Jermaine has a whole business around how to play piano by ear. Most of his products are between $10 and $30. His most expensive product is $97. He does have a couple of continuity programs that one is $10 a month, one is around $20 a month. He does over $8 million a year just selling the products less than $100. And what really gets him to be so successful is because he's a master at getting people to consume the information and the information gets them to consume the tools. I've often wondered if Jermaine had an offline business first, because he seems to get it in ways that most internet marketers don't.
Yeah, he does. He definitely does.
So let's walk our listeners through the steps that you would go through in an offline business for a minute. And I will help you compare those to what that means they need to do in an online business. When you're getting ready to start, you already shared that you got to do your due diligence. You've got to do your research. You've got to figure out what niche you're going to be in, how you're going to monetize this, what your costs are going to be. Plan the forecast, if you will, of both profits and expenses. Where do you go from there?
Oh, are you talking to me?
Uh-huh. Yes, Marie. Where do you go from there?
I'm sorry. Where do you go from? I'm sorry. What did you say?
After you do the due diligence or research aspect, what do you do next to build an offline business?
Well, then you've got to be ready to make a decision and to commit somewhere. If you've done all your due diligence in terms of you know what you're going to do, then you've got to pick a location. You have to negotiate the lease. You have to get all of your state documents, your EIN number, your tax filings, your corporate, depending on how you're going to set up your corporation, all of that. And then you have to sign the lease, and you do all your build-out after that.
Awesome. And then when you go to do your build-out online, no different. You've got to set up your hosting account. You've got to find your domain name. It is much better online to not have your domain name be a domain name because it has a keyword in it, but to instead do it exactly the same way that you would in an offline business. In an offline business, when you're choosing your identity, it's a matter of branding. What do you want to be known as? Is it memorable? Is it going to attract the right people? Do the exact same thing for figuring out what your domain name is going to be called and what the name of the business is going to be called. Look at Google as an example. Sorry, go ahead.
I so agree with you there. And in the business before I got into this one, I named it Chicago Eyewear. It was a high-end eyewear. And again, you know, I wanted to also stress that everything I've ever done, I knew nothing about. So people always say to me, well, you know, you can do this and that because it's easy for you, or you just kind of know based on things you've done. When I did eyewear, I mean, so many of the things are kind of looking back. I mean, what idiot does the things I did? But, you know, just kind of go forward, and you have to commit to the inspiration within yourself. And with eyewear, I knew I wanted to do that, and I knew nothing about eyewear. I knew nothing about retail. I was new to Florida. I was in a mall that everybody told me there's no possible way you're going to sell expensive frames here. The reps at that point in time wouldn't even come to Naples. That was before Naples built up into what it is right now, but I couldn't even get a rep to come to Naples. And the irony is that one of the companies who I bought eyeglasses from, Readers, who told me it was out of my mind for coming to Naples, what are you even thinking? Give him the money and he'd go blow it on a vacation, is the man who ended up buying me out 10 years later. So it's a great, great story. But again, and the eyewear world is very legal. You have to have licensed opticians in order to dispense eyewear. I had absolutely no intention of going back to school to be an optician. I hated all that. I had to hire people, so my paper was way up. And so I don't take that as an excuse from people. You don't have to know things. You can hire things, but you do have to be on top of your business, and you do have to know fundamentals. And I didn't, you know, everybody's like, call it offshore eyewear or some other, you know, whatever, Pelican this and Pelican that. And I didn't want it to have a theme of anything cheesy. So I copied it. There was a big, very popular line at the time called LA Eyeworks. And I had just gone to a trade show and I decided to carry their collection. And I thought, I'm just going to copy this. And I kind of did a little research on, here you go again, Gina, this is what you teach. I did a little research. What was more I Works or I Wear, what commanded more of what I was going after? And it was LAI Works, but they were kind of fun. It was a little bit of a different niche than I was going after. And I decided that I Wear was a little more classy, upscale. And I decided to call it Chicago because I was Chicago Eyewear. I got a guy that created a logo that was perfect, and that was my branding.
Oh, that's awesome. Wow, what a great way to do it.
Yeah,
and that worked, right?
It worked, and for 10 years, I never, ever, ever tired of it. It was just right. And I think when you know it, you know it. Just like my labels right now, we have gone to etched bottles, but it took a long time. I went through artists before I found the gal that I work with now, and she's just really, really good. And when she came along and she kind of tweaked what we had, and I love it. It's right. It works, and it's the branding that I'm going after.
Wow. So what kind of research did you do to select iWorks as opposed to Eyewear?
I looked up every eyewear company possible, and I looked at all their logos and their whole kind of mission statement as to who was their ownership, who was their ultimate core. Most at that time, high-end eyewear was very, very, it was a brand new niche that just got started. So there were all these little companies that were starting, and they were all kind of going after a different pocket. And I looked them all up and what their mission statements were and who worked for them and did a lot of the rest personally. So a lot of it was kind of intuitive in terms of, you know, what was I receiving from that. And that's how I made the decision. And I just think that iWorks was a little more edgy, where Eyewear was a little more high-end. And that's why I chose Eyewear.
And it is absolutely identical to the research that you would do to build an online business and figure out what the brand is. You
mm-hmm.
want to go out and look at what's already out there.
It does come from the top. You know, I looked at who was the president, who are the reps, what do they like, what does their logo look like, what do their frames look like, what kind of revenues are they doing approximately, what stores are carrying their product, because I really didn't want anything that everybody had. And so, it was just, I don't know why the digging was a little bit easier, it seems like. But the more I talk, the more, you know, the digging in the online world is exactly the same thing. You do feel
it really is.
There's an intuitiveness that comes out of that. And there's no, just like I tell people now with what I do now, there are no rules, you know. It's not, you know, a tablespoon of this or two tablespoons of that. There's no rules. Do you like raspberry better than blueberry? Then do put more raspberry in it, you know. Or it's what kind of resonates to you, because you will drive the success of that business. It's the intangible that is driven. It's not the tangible. Like you say, strategic and tactical outsourcing, that's so, you cannot, no one can replace you. I don't worry about that, because customers come to my store, they get me, they get my staff, and Naples Olive Oil Company. I have a competitor here, and we are day and night. And as long as I can get a customer to go to both, I've got that customer.
Yes. Well, and this is why in an online business, it's so important to do your own research. I really do not advocate my students hiring other people to do the research piece for them. All of that kind of stuff gives you the feeling that you're talking about. It helps you develop the intuition you're going to need to turn your business into a success, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and it is that intuition that it's something that is so strong within you that you can be persuasive. I mean, people who know me know that I'm like a bulldozer, and you know, when I talk, I mean what I say. I say it with authority, but that's because I know what I'm talking about. You're not going to tell me much about things that I absolutely know. And this is my business. This is how I make my living. And, you know, there is no outsourcing that.
Well, and that's what I call passion. One of my friends used to say that
if you look at the word passion, it's pass I on. And to her, it meant pass it on. Passion mm-hmm. is really what is it that you're going to pass on, right? What mm-hmm. influence will you have on the people that you meet, the prospects, the customers, et cetera? If you don't mm-hmm. have a passion for what you're doing, it is darn hard to get it anywhere near the levels of success that you want, isn't it?
I think that's very, very, very true. You know, in the eyewear business, I really was very good at fitting eyewear on faces. And you have to really get what you're selling. It's not easy to sell glasses. And because we have a lot of money here in Naples, it makes it even harder to sell. Everybody thinks it's so easy because there's so much money here. Uh-uh. These people all want discounts, coupons, you know, 2-for-1.
Oh, yes.
You have to earn that. You've got to earn that money. And I will never forget one of my very first customers when I was in the eyewear business. I switched locations there as well. I used to carry our Cartier frames. Everybody probably knows those. Cartier, you know, they're real high-end. They're not so high-end as they are. They're very expensive. There's a distinction there. But anyway, it just so happens I'm German and I speak and understand German. And it just so happens that I had German customers, only they didn't know that I understood what they were saying. So at the time, VisionWorks, which is no longer exists, but they carried some Cartiers too. And illegally, but that's a whole other story. Anyway, I heard her saying that I was $10 cheaper than they were at, now we're talking about a $2,000 frame, okay?
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. And I just happened to be able to understand what she was saying. Now, they left, and they thought about it, and they came back, and they bought them for me because I was $10 cheaper.
Oh, holy
and then
cow.
So along there, you know, we have all the best lenses, whatever was, you know, the best at the time with the coatings and all that sort of thing. So you're talking about a multi-$1,000 one pair of glass sale. But and that customer also came back and I said, you know, how come you didn't buy anything last year? And they said, because you were a new store and we wanted to know you would still be here in the event we had a problem with the eyewear.
Makes a lot of sense.
So when they're in that price range, everyone thinks it's so easy, but not really. You have to earn. There's an earning process that goes on. But when you have earned them, they will be loyal to you.
Mm-hmm. And they will tell everybody that they know, not because you're paying them an affiliate commission, not because you've got referral fees, but just because in talking about themselves, your name will start coming up in conversation.
And they trust you. And like Gina is always talking about, you know, relationships. It's vital, vital, vital. You know, I have a competitor here, and the guy's a bad guy. I don't make any bones. I'm not going to totally slam him direct face, but I make no bones about saying he's a dollar store and I'm Neiman Marcus. And when you go into that store and people who know how I do things, the people who know, who've known me through the eyewear business and some of the proofing I've done, they know I do a certain way. And then they go into the place on Fifth, and they're like, this is Marie's store. This just doesn't seem like her. So my branding is not prevalent there. People who know. And so you have to stay true to who you are on every level. And I'm not saying everyone should do high-end. I have always been about excellence and doing right and that sort of thing. So it doesn't matter if you're selling high-end or low-end, but do what you do with integrity.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And Rhonda and I have had many discussions about this, haven't we, Rhonda?
Oh, yeah, just a few hundred.
Yeah. Drives us nuts when we see people trying to go into their business with a pseudonym, a pen name, et cetera, and they're really doing it literally to hide behind the name. You know,
mm-hmm.
when you're doing that, you have no business being in business to start with.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no way it's going to succeed for the long haul. It can't. People see right through it. It might just be a feeling that they have. It might be something that they can't really put their finger on. Why do they not trust that business? But boy, oh boy, it sure is obvious that they don't trust the business when you look at the numbers. Because the
uh-huh.
business just cannot succeed in a big way when you're trying to do it that way.
And it's something that I really, really harp on big time with my students, because it just won't work in today's business world, not online or offline.
Yeah, and that's why I'm passionate about speaking at this point, because, I mean, there's just some real futility with some of the things that are going on in my world right now, and that window was a lot shorter than I thought it was going to be. So I can't, you know, you just can't fight the bad guys, but what you can do is educate the public. And that's why I'm just so bananas about what I want to do.
Uh-huh. And you really do. You are so passionate about it. We cannot talk to you about olive oil without hearing it. It is just an incredible level of excitement. It comes out of your pores at every level when you start talking about olive oil.
Record,
oh,
right?
It makes me want to eat Italian food.
it's so fundamental. I just can't even imagine why in the world anybody would want to eat rotten olive oil. I mean, why would you want to do that? Would you eat rotten apples? I mean, why would you do that? If anybody could ever give me a good reason as to why they would do that, maybe I would change my mind, but so far I can't think of anything.
Yeah.
Well, and just passing that message on to the world is really what you're all about. And, you know, the one thing I really insist upon with my students is that in building their business, they're setting the whole strategy up for causing people to become evangelists. That's what happens when you get people who know, like, and trust you at the level you're talking about, who really do tell everybody that they know. You really need to do that and plan that carefully, because it doesn't happen by accident.
Right. Well, you know, I really hate mediocrity. I think that is just the absolute cancer of the world. And for people to be mediocre and not care is just—it's just terrible. It's one thing to make an informed—you know—make a decision, an informed decision. That's what you do. It's fine. You know, each to their own. But don't be mediocre. Don't be ignorant. Don't be uninformed. I mean, you know, we all have a responsibility as humans to contribute.
We really do.
Yeah.
It's an awesome way to say it.
It really is. And you know what's really beautiful is that a lot of people have this feeling they want to do something big and change the world. And it doesn't have to always be some act that feels huge. I mean, getting people to do one thing that's a little healthier or make one informed choice or whatever, that is also a big change that happens. And so things you're doing around educating people in your business, no matter whether your business is olive oil or anything else, it's just such a gift for people to have that knowledge.
Well, we only have about 90 seconds left today. So any last advice for people coming to the online world from the offline world, Marie?
Do I have any questions or comments?
No, any final advice for folks who want to do that?
Well, honestly, from the bottom of my heart, nobody's paying me to say this, is join Directions U. It will change your life. Get involved in the Bachelor's program. It will open up a light bulb that just isn't there anywhere else. That's how it was for me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
for sharing your wonderful words of wisdom with everyone today.
I just
love the way that this is all finally coming together for you. With as much success as you've had in business, if you just apply what you know to what you really want to do in this new venture, you can't help but be successful, which is just awesome.
Thank you. That's what my intention is.
And if you want to watch what Marie's doing online, you'll find her at NaplesOliveOilCompany.com. NaplesOliveOilCompany.com. Rhonda and I will be back next week at noon Eastern here on Blog Talk Radio for another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101. Thank you again, Marie, for being here, and thank you, Rhonda, for arranging this for us. It was a great call.
Thank you so much. This was awesome, and just keep going, everyone.
See you in a little bit, Marie.
Okay. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Come back next week for Relationship Marketing 101. Join us at Directions University, www.directionsu.com, for passion-powered results.